2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green, it's Thursday the 21st of January and this is Game On.
Coming up today, the manager with Kerry Connections who has taken his side to the FA Cup fourth round.
Also in football, Lisa Fallon is with us to discuss her new coaching role. And in rugby, Jamie Heaslip and Peter Stringer will preview Munster versus Leinster.
I think you take every game and you do what's necessary to win. And I'm glad that in the Ulster game 2 weeks ago, at least they used some of our tactics in that game as well. So that's brilliant to see.
Plus, we've Shep on a big weekend in the NFL and we've some very sad news from the Irish athletic scene.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Yes, as Donica said, some very, very sad news from the Irish athletic scene. Tributes are being paid all afternoon to former Irish Olympic athlete and renowned coach Gerry Kiernan, who has died at the age of 67. He was an absolute giant in Irish athletics, ninth in the Los Angeles Olympics marathon in 1984, and he also won the Dublin Marathon on two occasions. A four-minute miler to and a respected coach and also a very, very popular TV pundit. And to remember Gerry, I'm joined by Ian O'Riordan of the Irish Times. Ian, it's not too often I think that people are really thrown and stopped in their tracks, but I think today was one of those days. Well, people aren't going to forget anytime soon just the passing of Gerry Kiernan.
Yes, good evening, Marie, and obviously condolences to the Kiernan family, first of all. I suppose I would have had the honour and pleasure of doing some running with Gerry over the years, then maybe doing some working with Gerry and doing a little bit of drinking with Gerry over the years. And not only was he a great runner, but I think Gerry meant a great many things to a great many people. And I think that's why his death today has been so saddening and been so shocking as well, especially at the age of 67. And anybody who knew Gerry would knew he was always kind of that feisty individual, always full of energy and full of life. Now, he hadn't been well the last number of months, so there was an illness there, but it's certainly a massive shock for anybody who knew Gerry. And then you think about the influence he had on the sport, and you mentioned some of the tributes there from his peers and some of the athletes who would have coached in recent years, and a lot of those came from rival clubs. I mean, Gerry was always a Clonliffe man, but a lot of the athletes like Kieran McGeehan or Kevin Dooney or Joe Sweeney or John Travers came from rival clubs, but that was never an issue for Gerry. He was always there for the betterment of the athletes, and unquestionably got the best out of them. And again, if you think about some of the work he's done with athletes, it wasn't just on the track and field. He wasn't just about being times or medals or results. He was very much a kind of a life coach, I suppose, as well, if that's not too big a word for it. And it's funny, when I got the news today myself, I just kind of felt a strange urge to go for a run, because Gerry was all about running and he had this incredible love of running as well, and he was running right up to his last few years. And I think that's the thing Gerry will be most remembered for, I suppose, was a great runner, not just on the marathon running, but on the track as well. People forget, he's just said he was a sub 4 minute miler. He was Irish 1500 meter champion. I think he was a 2-time Irish cross country champion and absolutely one of the greats of Irish athletics.
Okay, well, let's remember some of his great days.
And Gerry, I know it's a bone of contention with you regularly when we're covering the major international meets. That, I mean, she only became a Turkish citizen last year.
She's never been to Turkey, Peter, in her life. She trains at a training camp in E10,
yeah.
And she's been paid by the Turkish Federation, and she pitches up at these championships, and she has no connection with Turkey no more than I have.
It's a terrific reward. You see, Peter, races like this, I mean, it's not the World Championships, it's not the Olympic Games, but for a lot on the Irish team, it actually is their Olympics.
spoke to Kira a few hours ago. She was very nervous. I was equally so at the other end. I didn't try to transmit my nervousness to her because I saw the field. All I saw were potential obstacles. There was 12. There was 11 girls in the field who would run faster than her. But we don't run on paper. We run on a track.
Can you describe, Gerry, how difficult it might be when you have an interruption like that and you've just been thrown out of your rhythm, and how difficult is it to get back in touch with the field and then get back in the pace of the race?
It's almost impossible. I knew that John's race was over after 70, 80 metres because he wasn't running against mugs.
Yeah, and speaking of marathons and Olympics, your own high point there, you came ninth in a very strong field in 1984, but I suppose that got maybe overshadowed by somebody who came second.
Well, that doesn't bother me, Sean. I mean, I know what I did, and I know who I beat, and I know who beat me. And it was, I mean, that particular race was a realisation, which I didn't have beforehand, that on my day I could beat people that I thought were beyond me, and my peers as well. I mean, that's whom I look for approval. What do my peers think of it? I'm not particularly pushed, Sean, if I'm not mentioned in the same breath as John Tracy. John Tracy was an extraordinary athlete. He was, after all, world cross country champion.
But a top 10 finish is some achievement, isn't it?
It is, Sean. It is. I mean, I was probably the only person in the top 20 who actually worked. In my Olympic year, I was teaching 44 kids, and I often wonder what could have been if, let's say, the preceding year or two, I wasn't working at all. But look, it's onwards and upwards. I'm coaching people. This gives me far more satisfaction than I ever got out of running.
And he was a character, and I think that really came across there in that tribute. He was never afraid to say what he thought. He was so passionate and so authentic.
God, yeah, some lovely memories there of his voice. Yeah, as you say, completely unabashed in his commentary. Never made any apologies, and could be unforgiving, could be cutting, could be very witty, but incredibly sharp. And he had this incredible capacity to read a race. And I know this is kind of cliche for all commentators, but he could see things that not anybody else could see very easily. And I think that made his insights into athletics so unique. And he wasn't afraid to occasionally, dare I say, point a finger at other sports and say maybe the other sports get a little bit too much profile or credit, and sometimes whether that's GAA or rugby players. But that wasn't out of spite or anger. It was just out of the fact that he believed in athletics, and he believed in the fact that it is one of the most difficult sports to succeed in. And sometimes our level of expectations for athletes is not always realistic in terms of winning medals on the Olympic stage or world stage. But I think that's one of his legacies. He said it there himself. Like, what he brought to the sport wasn't just his own achievements, but what he did afterwards in coaching. And like, it's a rare thing to be a successful athlete and then go on to do the same for other athletes, and the likes of Kieran McGee. And don't forget, he took over Kieran when her career was almost finished early on, when she had so many injuries back in 2012 and 2013. And then they parted ways, I think, after Rio, but to mutual consent, because Gerry agreed that Kira had to go on to move to the next level. So she moved to the UK and is now training out of Manchester. And the same with the likes of Kevin Dooney, who had some mental health issues, but he helped Kevin overcome those. So it wasn't just the athletics career that he was looking after. But look, sadly missed. And 67, incredibly young man. We lost Pat Hooper there before Christmas as well, another one of the Irish marathon greats. And these are the kind of people, when you think of what they did for Irish athletics, both in their own career and afterwards, you make you realise that they will be sadly missed, and, you know, irreplaceable in so many ways.
In just highlighting, you know, he has criticised other sports or just highlighted some issues within other sports. But interestingly, like, people liked him for doing that. You know, they respected him so much that, you know, there wasn't a lot of negativity because of his views. People took them on board, and that's probably a measure of the athlete, the coach and the man as well.
Yeah, because you know, Gerry could talk the talk, because he'd run the miles. You know, people knew he was tough. I mean, I think he ran 47 minutes for 10 miles back in the day when, you know, if you ran 47 minutes now, you'd be considered world class. And this was back in the 1970s. So, you know, that level of respect was there. So he had that to begin with. But secondly, yeah, I mean, he was standing up in the sport of athletics for all the right reasons. That it is such a difficult sport to succeed in. And maybe sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a softness given towards GA players. But look, as I say, that wasn't, you know, it wasn't just about comparing the sports all the time. It was really Gerry standing up for track and field, for the sport of running that he loved and that he cared for. And even
funny enough, the last time I spoke to Gerry, not long before Christmas, and again, like, I knew he wasn't well. He made the point himself that he wasn't well, and he slowed down a lot. But one of the last things he was talking about was the fact that in the face of the COVID-19 and restrictions, that it was very important for the sport to try and find ways to accommodate the athletes, to have some sort of racing and have some sort of competition, given what was going on in the GA and rugby. So even to the end, he was standing up for the sport, and that's the kind of thing that will be missed as well. Of course, is just that beautiful voice that he brought to the RTE analysis.
And that's one of the things that I'll always remember, Ian. It's probably how, like Marie's mentioned, that how straight talking he was in his analysis. I think that kind of earned the respect out of everyone, and maybe that's why he was such a good coach, because he gave it between the eyes.
Yeah, and he wasn't afraid to say, you know, if you ran badly, and sometimes it, you know, we kind of take those kind of things for granted. Mm. But he was able to see things, and if athlete had a bad day, he would say that, and sometimes that caused a bit of, you know, conflict with athletes as well. And but it was funny because he didn't, you know, and I mentioned going drinking with him sometimes as well, and you could go for a drink with him, but he wouldn't take your. He wouldn't let you off softly. If anything you any point you raised, he would argue with it. And he wasn't afraid to say he was kind of fishing out of a few things. And by the way, he was very passionate about National Hunt racing. He had a real love of Barcelona Football Club and a great love of Italian fine wines as well. So he was very cultured outside of the sport too. And sometimes he brought that sense to his arguments. But I think if you go back to what you mentioned about his commentary, I think it was the fact that he'd been there, he'd done that on the track, on the cross country, on the road, and not many athletes had experienced what he had and was able to bring that style of vocabulary, I suppose, and vernacular to his analysis, and that's going to be irreplaceable. I don't think there's anybody in the sport right now in Ireland who will do that as well and as often as Gerry did.
It was lovely to see just people that he had thought coming out today and mentioning what a lovely teacher he was and the impact that he had on them as well, but also that he was great company, and it seems he had coffee with several people just going on social media today and just really entertained and engaged and just had so much to offer in conversation.
And in very gentle ways, he'd always be encouraging as well. He wouldn't be kind of obviously saying things, but sometimes it might saying, oh, you're looking kind of half fit, or have you run yet today? In other words, like, if you hadn't run yet today, well, it hadn't been a very positive day. And he'd throw in words like, your cadence is looking good, or you need to improve your gait a little bit. These kind of words which are very kind of quirky, and you kind of have to go away and think about, was that a compliment, or was that a kind of a challenge, or what exactly was he saying? But as I say, I had the pleasure of running with Gerry a few times around UCD, and always came away feeling the better for it, and you know, we could argue, and I know, funny enough, I know we used to argue about things like different things like Bob Dylan's voice or the choice of red wine, but there were always good, healthy conversations, and that's going to be sadly missed as well.
That's for sure. Look, I think I'd say on behalf of everybody that I would like to give our condolences to Gerry Kiernan's friends and family. And Ian, thanks so much for joining us. I have to say that he certainly has left his mark on Irish athletics, and there will be an awful lot of sad people out there today with this news. Thanks, Ian, so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break.
On the go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, welcome back. So there was some big news in the world of football today. Some very, very good news, I have to say. Lisa Fallon has been appointed first team coach at Galway United. So I feel like this is a really, really big moment for football, for coaching and for women. And Lisa joins us now on the line. Lisa, look, first of all, congratulations, because like, I followed your career for a long time and I know how hard you've worked and how many jobs you've done and how difficult it is to reach where you have reached. But this is a big moment.
Yeah, thanks, Marie. Yeah, I suppose it was probably, it's probably something I've probably dreamt of since I was a kid, you know, but you know, it's it has been a long journey, and I was never sure that it would be possible to be a head coach in men's football. And I'm really grateful to John Caulfield for putting his faith in me and to give me this opportunity, and to the club and the board and all the Galway United supporters. It is a big step, and okay, I might be the first, but I really genuinely, one thing I know for sure is I won't be the last, and I just really want to give it everything I have and make sure I do this opportunity justice.
It's a tough one, Issa, because, you know, in a way, we always have conversations and we're saying, you know, you just want to be treated the same as the men in the game, but somebody has to go first, and that's the reality of it. And, you know, if people are going to follow in your footsteps too, you know, so it's just really brilliant.
Yeah, I think, you know, I suppose I've been involved in men's football for such a long time, probably the majority of my coaching career. You know, when I was at Cork City, I had a spell at Bohemians, and then obviously I was fortunate to work with the Dublin senior Gaelic footballers as well, and then I had my time in Chelsea, where I predominantly worked with the women's squad. And it was, you know, it was a really it's been an exciting journey, and I suppose there probably is, I maybe feel a little bit today that there is a little bit of additional pressure, but I really just want to focus on doing the job. And, you know, I've had some time in the Leinster Senior League and in the AUL with Sheriff YC, and I really think those experiences of being in those environments, coaching and being the head coach or the assistant manager, or at one stage the head coach in Lakelands, I really do feel that those experiences have stood to me massively, because that's where you learn your trade. That's where you learn how to adapt your sessions, dealing with the lads. And then obviously I was at Cork City for nearly 6 years. So, I learned so much in that environment. And obviously with Northern Ireland as well. Like, I mean, I'm so fortunate to have had so many really good coaches and managers who put faith in me and invested their time in developing me as a coach, and I'm really a product of that, and I'm just so grateful to them, and I really want to go on now and prove to them that the investment of their time and energy in me was worthwhile.
There's some lovely quotes from John Caulfield today about your appointment, but just something interesting that stuck out in my mind. He said your time in England transformed you into a top coach and giving you the understanding and belief to coach at this level.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I started out as a team analyst and an opposition analyst. So even though I was doing my coaching badges, it was, you know, whilst I was probably coaching in the Leinster Senior League with men's teams and in, like I said, with the Sheriff YC men's team, it is different making the transition into the League of Ireland and as a coach when you've been there in, I suppose, as an analyst. And, you know, maybe my confidence wasn't high enough to do it, but, you know, I think you don't know what you don't know until you know what you didn't know, if that makes sense. And I think when I went to England, it really exposed me to a different level of the game, and it exposed me to different experiences. And I knew I needed more. I needed to go and experience more. I needed to get out of my comfort zone. I'd been at Cork City for so long, and obviously with Northern Ireland, I needed to go and come out of those environments and test myself, and for it to be new and for it to be difficult and for them to be good challenges. And that's the only way I felt I could stretch and grow, was by going and putting myself into a higher level environment and see what I could learn and listen, make mistakes and get good learnings. But I got to work with so many incredible people over there, and I still would have strong relationships with the League Managers Association, and for, you know, all those support networks that you have, they give you confidence. But now I do feel really ready for this. I think, you know, there was a time where I wondered would I ever be ready, but I think now I know I couldn't ever be any more ready than I am now.
Lisa, I find it fascinating, you know, because you look at it from your side, of course, with all your qualifications, all your experience. But why Galway United for you? What did you see there that interests you? What do you think you can add?
I think they're a really good club, and there's so much potential. There's great resources there as a coach. You know, what you want to know is that you have the resources and the tools to actually do your job. And I really felt after the first few conversations that it was evident that, you know, I would have the best chance of you know, having a good crack at it there. And obviously I've worked with John before and he's just a winner. And I know what he expects. I know what he demands. I know the standards he works at. And I really thrived in the environment he created at Cork City. And, you know, that's why I know what I'll get there. And it's also, I suppose, a little bit comforting to go through this experience personally, but also to have someone of the experience of John there, and who I know is going to be a big support to me, and the belief that he puts in me gives me massive confidence as well.
So what's the plan then for getting back training? When does all that pre-season happen, Lisa?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we're scheduled for a start date on the 26th of March. So hopefully, obviously, there's external factors at play and we have to consider all of those. But I think, you know, we're looking at towards an early February start, and that's what we've planned for over the last number of weeks. And, you know, we've done a lot of work in the last, like I said, in the last few weeks, getting ready and making sure that once we get into pre-season that we hit the ground running and that we are, you know, get a right go at it, and hopefully then raring to go for the 26th of March if that's the date we start on.
Lisa, is there areas you've seen already that you know, yeah, that's a foundation rock that we need to fix?
In Galway?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've got a really exciting team. You know, they came so close to getting promoted last season, and you know, there's a lot of good stuff already in place. So it's really just, it's such a new squad we have this year, and it's so exciting, and it's a really new group, and that's why you have to go in and just treat it as it is, and the culture, it will develop internally itself. And that's the exciting part, is that it's such a new group and we have an opportunity to really create something amongst ourselves.
It sounds great. I was in college in Galway and spent many a night up in Terryland watching Alan Murphy, who's in my class, playing football. So I'll definitely have to make the trip.
The rollcaster, get it out.
Yeah, for sure. Lisa Fallon, thanks so much and best of luck with the new role.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
So in this third lockdown, Chorley FC did a really good job of lifting everyone's spirits when they defeated Derby County in the FA Cup and subsequently went viral with their post-match rendition of Adele's hit Someone Like You. They play Wolves tomorrow in the fourth round of the competition, and there'll be lots of Irish interest as manager Jamie Vermilio has links with Killarney, and I'm delighted to say he is with us now. Jamie, how are things?
Yeah, they're really good, thank you. A bit hectic at the moment. There's a lot going on around the club and in my life, but it's all for the right reasons.
I'd imagine so. You're a head teacher as well. So how are you juggling everything right now?
Yeah, and it's a big question. Everyone always asks that. It's not easy when your mind's sort of engrossed in the football side of things and the preparation. But you know, I've got a job to do at school. That's first and foremost to me. That's my career. And I've been in school today. I'll be in school tomorrow. Try and get off a little bit early and see the kids out, and then shoot over to Chorley when we host the Mighty Wolves.
I love it. Get off a little bit early. I'm sure they'll understand, Jamie, if you just knock off a little bit early.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be okay with me.
So tell us a little bit about the club, because you kind of burst into everyone's consciousness. I know you had the song out before the Derby County game, but it really went viral after that, and everybody then became very familiar with the club. But just tell us a little bit about the background.
Well, in terms of the song, we were quite keen on the psychology of sport, and about 6 or 7 years ago we were looking for different routines. So when the lads were coming into the changing room, what would happen? When you were to score a goal, what would happen? And also what would happen if we won, especially in some big games? And we were looking for a song to put on. I put Adele on. This one, I think I was playing at the time. No one can really remember who did it, who exactly was there, but it's just kind of evolved. And we've had some big moments over the last few years. Every big moment has been celebrated by singing Adele. And this year it's been publicised even more. And as you say, it's a real feel-good story. It's great that people are getting involved and can associate with it, especially with the underdog side of it. And it's great also for me personally to have the links over to Ireland and especially to Celtic Kerry.
Jimmy, we see it so much. Success is measured, obviously, with trophies, but it's the memories in the dressing room is what you crave when you come out of a little bit. You seem like you've a really special group there and a lot of young men.
Yeah, you're dead right. Anyone who's involved in sport, when you say to them what you miss, what they miss is the crack. They miss being around the lads. They miss the banter and everything else that comes with those strong relationships that you do develop. And this group's only been together since the start of the season. I've only had four players from last year. So to have this sort of instant success and instant limelight for these young lads, I mean, some of them are only 20 years of age. Much was made of Derby's average age, which I think was 19 or 20. And our average age is only just over 22. So it's a young group of lads, aspirational, like most footballers. They want to play in the Football League. And at the moment, they've got themselves a great platform to be able to do that. But as you've just alluded to, no one can take these memories away from them now, and with social media the way it is, these videos are going to be there forever and ever, embedded into Google and YouTube and wherever else. So it's great to be a part of that, great to be able to share it with other people as well.
So tell us a little bit about the club.
So Chorley Football Club's an non-league club established in 1883. They've been going for a long time. They've never really been, I think, quite a biggish non-league club. Chorley's quite, people think it's a small area, but it's relatively big with a lot of industrial estates around and a lot of businesses. And when I first started at the club nearly 20 years ago, I was playing against sort of 100, being supported by about 100 people to 150 people. They'd turn up and pay £3 or £4. The lads get paid. At that time, the lads were getting paid sort of £20, £30, maybe a little bit more. And I started playing. That was a big thing for me to get my first sort of £20 paycheck doing something that I loved. And then since then, the club has just grown a little bit. They've been up and down, but the last 10 years, Gary Flitcroft took over. I moved back to the club. We've had a few big names with Matt Jansen, Gary Flitcroft, and a few other high-profile players for our level. And we've been on a bit of a journey. So we've had three promotions over the last 10 years. We've been in the playoffs three or four times. And last season, we were fortunate enough to get into the National League, which is the pinnacle of non-league football over in England, playing against some top sides. Most of them are apart from us, and I think one more, they're all full-time professional footballers. Unfortunately, that season didn't finish well, and it was curtailed in March with the coronavirus. And we were demoted because at that time we were sitting bottom of the league. And we started again, and it's been a tough, tough journey for every team, every non-league team. And we're very fortunate now to have this quite instant success afterwards. And it puts us in a really strong position going forward.
Jimmy, we're lucky we actually catch you on your way to training for Wolves tomorrow night. How was it trying to get the lads back to ground after a big result, knowing that tomorrow night's game is another massive one?
I think it's tough, it's very tough. It's tough for the players, it's tough, you know, it's tough for me, because the amount of publicity that's surrounding us at the moment, with the last non-league team in the competition, we're in the fourth round, and that doesn't happen every year. We've obviously got the links with Adele, which has certainly blown up the attention around, and there's a little bit of talk now about Will she do something with us, go into some type of partnership with us and try and raise a little bit of money? That's something that we're quite keen to pursue if she's interested in it. We do a lot of charity work at Chorley Football Club, like you do in a lot of community clubs like Killarney Celtic and Killarney Athletic, and we do a lot of work with a charity called Sport and Memories, and they work with people with dementia and loneliness. And I think at times like this, when we're in so much in the limelight, we're looking for opportunities to try and help other people as well. So, you know, if that is an option of doing something like that, the club are excited to get involved. But going back to the question, it's things like that that are happening every day. Social media is just literally in the hands of our players at the moment. So when there's a tweet or something going, there's no doubt that they're looking at it. There'll be some element of distraction, but at the same time, they're very focused. They've got a big job to do tomorrow. They're looking forward to it. They know it's going to be a mammoth task, but they're going to give it a good go.
It must be difficult for you as well, Jamie, just because you're playing Wolves. You obviously want to go and win, but you have the loyalty factor as well, because I'm sure there's lots of guys out there that you'd love to put out and start, but at the same time, you probably need to pick a team that you think will go out and beat Wolves.
You know what? You're dead right. There's some decisions to be made with regards to the team, and you know, do you select the lads who perhaps have played in every game and deserve the chance, or do you play the team that you think just might have something to be able to defeat Wolves? You know, either way, the team that I put out, they'll all deserve to play, they'll all deserve to start, and the lads that I leave out will feel hard done by, and that is difficult for any manager making any decision in any game, but a game like this of this magnitude is it certainly adds a little bit more pressure, if you like, to the decisions.
It's interesting as well. There's a bit of history between the two clubs that has come to light over the last few days.
That's right, yeah. And in 1986, Chorley played against Wolves in the FA Cup, and at that time, if you drew the game, you had a replay. So I think there were two draws, two 1-1 draws, and then eventually Chorley ended up beating Wolves 3-0. And anyone who comes to the Chorley Football Club and walks inside the changing rooms and around the boardroom, you'll see photographs of that night. And anyone who talks about the successes recently always refer back to the time when Chorley beat Wolves. It's the biggest occasion for the club, certainly in recent history. So, you know, now it's a chance for the lads to go and write even more history. They can be the players that are talked about even now from 1986. The players now coming out of the woodwork and getting involved with us, which is fantastic. You know, we've got some players who are age 60, 70, some a bit younger than that, but they're with us and they're on our journey and they're able to experience it too. So we're delighted.
Just on it, Jamie, as Irish people, we love people that do well, that we have associations with from at home, and there's big ties with you from Kerry in Killarney.
That's right, yeah. I used to live in Killarney, County Kerry. Wonderful place, really love it. I like to go back every year and see all my friends. I've got strong relationships with people there, and I keep in touch with them. My family live there. My uncle John and Auntie Angela live in Killarney with some of my cousins, and yeah, some really strong friends. So I played for Killarney Athletic, I played for Killarney Celtic, and there's a bit of rivalry between the two clubs. Not great when you're moving from one to the other, but both fantastic clubs have done a lot for the local areas and for the schoolboys who are trying to make their way through to the footballing ranks. But yeah, a lovely place, and there's a bit of talk as well about Chorley Football Club going over to Killarney and perhaps playing in a pre-season friendly or a little tour. So we look forward to maybe doing that when we can.
It wouldn't be a bad place to go at all. And just in terms of the pandemic that we're in as well, like, obviously you've done a great thing lifting everyone's spirits and, you know, giving everyone a focus, but it's quite difficult for a club like Chorley to have such a big game and for the fans to be missing out on it.
Yeah, you are right, and it is bittersweet. We love every moment that we're living at the moment, and we're taking advantage of it and trying our very best to soak it all in. But there is that bit that the fans can't take part. I mean, if you look back at the Derby game, the Peterborough game and the Wigan game, the amount of fans that could have been in, and the amount of finances as well that would have come with it. 2 years ago, we would have been, I dread to think about how much money we're not earning this year with it being the pandemic, but more so than that, it's the euphoria of the cup and the links and the bond with the fans. I mean, we would have been lifted up above the stands, you know, I mean, thrown high up like gods and worshipped on the pitch like you often see. But from a personal point of view as well, and for the players, it's like my little boy Sam loves football. He's 8 years old. All of his friends are made up that he's, you know, he's got this association with the club. But what I'm doing is I'm giving him a kiss on the way out, saying, "See you soon, son, watch it on the telly." Having all those experiences, which are great, and then not being able to really share it until you go back and go through the door and you can't. That is the sad thing about this. You know, we'll probably never have a chance to experience times like this again, and not being able to share them with your family is tough. We all know it's for the right reasons. We all know that we're trying to defeat this virus, but at the same time, you can't help but think what could have been.
Yeah, well, it is very, very difficult, and I think you outlined it very well there. Well, look, I think everybody in Ireland will be behind you tomorrow night at 7:45 when you take on Wolves. We wish Chorley and yourself, Jamie, as well, the best of luck. Thanks so much for taking our call.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
With Green Firm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, you know it's unusual times when we're chatting Interpro rivalries 2 weeks before Ireland take on Wales. But for red and blue tribes, green can wait till Sunday. We're joined by two men who were colourblind when it came to performance and always brought their best. In the blue corner, Jamie Heaslip, and in the best corner, Peter Stringer. Lads, how are you?
Good.
Very well, runners. Yeah.
Come here, Strings. Before we get into the ball, I know we're kept apart by 5K ruling, but I'm watching on Instagram, you're after getting a new training partner.
Yeah, do you know what? And for a change, it's someone smaller than me. It's great. Noah in the gym with me, my little three-year-old. And do you know what? It's to get him moving and to tire him out for the evening, because he's been a nightmare. When he can't get outside this weather, it's a disaster. When he's up hanging around till 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the evening, it's just to get him in the gym, get him on the treadmill and burn that energy off him.
I think we'd all agree with that. Jamie, it's great to have such a big game to look forward to. I was low last week, no quality rugby, but coming into such a busy Six Nations period, to have such a big Interpro game is great.
It's fantastic, and it's amazing that sport is able to go on, and talking to a couple of players in the Leinster environment over the last couple of weeks, they realise, you know, the joy and value they can bring to people's lives with a game. No, people can't be at it. Just being at home, being able to watch a massive derby like this on TV, I think they realise how much more important it is than just a game. Do you know what I mean? I know there's all the rivalry and the red and blue, but even as an outlet for people now, it's absolutely massive and they're more than aware of it. But I tell you what, I'm delighted to see this game going on. I have a couple of side bets going with people in terms of if Munster lose, I have to wear a jersey and kiss it and all this sort of stuff. So, but I don't think that's going to happen, but we can get into that as well. But it's exciting.
And Peter, the trial element of as well that's been bandied around, that it is a trial game for the Six Nations. Will the players be feeling that now as well in these days in the run-up to it?
Yeah, I think that there will be that pressure, and I think it's great, first of all, that we get an opportunity to see both teams fully stacked. And, you know, there's so many, I suppose, competitions within this game. You've got your, you know, guys fighting for their place on their own team, because for the first time in a long time with this Munster side, we're seeing genuine competition right across the squad for starting places. So guys want to put in a performance from that aspect, but also knowing that in many regards that the opposition that they'll come up against, you know, they're fighting for that Irish spot, because again, that Irish team is by no means you know, picked. There's certainly opportunities for guys to play into that Irish squad with Andy Farr looking on. So it certainly is, and it's got that great element of that old school, you know, trial game that, you know, you spoke about, and to have so many people, you know, the starters, the regular guys that we so rarely get to see in the modern game, is just, it's so exciting.
And Donica, there's the Paul O'Connell factor as well. Like, does that kind of give a new perspective in terms of team selection?
It's certainly new eyes, yeah, definitely. I would think if you were a forward now at the moment, you know there's someone going in there. And I think Paul's the type of fella, he won't look at past history, or maybe they would have looked at players and thought, yeah, he's not in the fold. I think everyone's probably going in off a clean slate with someone like, with Paul having a keen eye on it. So it'll be interesting to see. But the main thing, what I take away from it as well, Marie, on String's point, it is like an old school probables, possibles trial match. But Jamie, there's also the pressure at the moment of being out of contract. We know an awful lot of players haven't signed contracts, and we're chatting about club players, and maybe not just our internationals. There's guys that will want to put in big performance to pen deals.
It's interesting. You literally beat me to the punch, Donica, where, you know, you were talking about the trial game, and you know, it's big on the macro kind of vision of Ireland World Cup. This is actually a pretty pivotal time, and certain starts bed down on certain players and partnerships. But the subplot of all this, obviously, is, you know, players are at different stages of their career, and a lot of contracts are up right now. And it's a time where you have to prove your value to the team, both at the club and then the value to the national team as well. So there's an interesting subplot going on there with contracts, and that would be in the back of a lot of players' minds, but I'd say they'll park that now from today going forward, obviously, into what is a huge game, because it is old school. It's possible versus probable. There's a whole lot of talking points. You got back rows. You got different players coming back from injuries. You got, you know, what the centre partnerships, you know, the challenges going up there, back three. Like, to Strings' point, not only for Munster or Leinster, but for Ireland, I think it's the first time in a long time where we have really good, genuine competition across the board, and very few players, if any, are safe, essentially. Mm.
There's a little bit of needle as well, Peter, and we heard Van Graan just mentioning that Leinster had leaned on some of their tactics of late, which I think is kind of good to see as well.
you expect it in the week of a derby match, certainly. And look, I know there's always going to be, you know, words in the media and words from coaches, but I think, you know, the players will be fully focused on a game plan. And look, Munster probably in that semi-final were probably, you know, criticised for their approach in terms of their kicking game wasn't accurate. But I think there's still certainly scope for Munster to have that kind of that basis to their game in terms of a good accurate kicking game. And you know, it can be a very, very potent kind of weapon going forward if they're really accurate and they kick on their terms. But you know, the last couple of times they played against each other, it's been very much kicking the ball away because there haven't been any other options, and that's what has let Munster down in those big games. But we've seen a huge turnaround from them this season, from that Leinster defeat, and the way the young guys have stepped up to the mark, and they've brought a real energy and enthusiasm when the internationals have been away. So it's there's a real fresh mentality, I think, going into this game, and it's given Munster, I think, a lot of confidence. On the back of probably a Leinster defeat as well, that they'll see certainly they're in with a big shout of a win on the weekend.
Jamie, it's interesting Peter picks out the kicking game. We know a big rivalry, there'll always be passion and emotion, but what are the key areas for you? What are you looking out for on Saturday to see where maybe Leinster or Munster could kick on?
I think you're going to see, with the weather that's been forecasted, you're probably going to see deployment of a kicking game again. And there's nothing wrong with a kicking game for territory, but it's making sure that your kicks are accurate and your kick chase is even better. So I think where Munster let themselves down was their kick chase and accuracy probably wasn't as good as it has been. But they're further down the line from when Leinster and Munster played earlier in the year, and Munster really shown a variety in how they win, and I think that's a lot to do with the players, and they are really kind of bedding down and nailing down their game plan and execution. Because let's call a spade, you could have done all the Zoom calls you want, but all of us who have been on enough Zoom calls know that it's still not the same thing as being with someone and getting through it. And once they got together, and you can see they have more and more time together, their squad is getting better and better, they're with the coaches, with the players, everything. I think they have a lot of potential against Leinster. And if you want to beat Leinster, just look at the formula to beat Leinster. It's stop their quick ruck ball, it's don't let them get over the game line consistently, and don't make mistakes, because they will pressure you. They will work very hard to keep 14 in the defensive line. You think you have no space, you make a mistake, they turn over the ball and they punish you very, very quickly. So when you have the ball, you got to be patient, you got to be smart, you got to play in the right areas. You can't make mistakes, and commit Leinster to that ruck. Don't let them have 14 people in the defensive line. And then when they have it, you've got to stop them on the gain line, because they look to constantly move the point of contact, have variety in their attack, commit your numbers, and then exploit the space. It's very, very simple, but they do it very, very efficiently and very effectively. But as I said, Munster, full deck of players here to pick from, a lot of selection headaches. They have shown that they've been able to take the key moments over these last few months in big, big games, and they're big players standing up, and they need that again this Saturday.
Peter, fans and critics alike were crying out really to see the evidence of the imprint of the likes of Larkham and Rowntree. They're what they were bringing to Munster, and this evolution of the game that people are starting to talk about now, is that what we're seeing? Are we seeing the impact of those coaches now?
I think we are. There's no doubt about it. First and foremost, Munster's game is very much reliant on a solid set piece. I thought the line out, I think Kevin O'Byrne has been an incredible player for Munster this season. The line-out has gone very well, the scrum, the set piece, and the add-on to that, when all those basics are done very, very well and effectively, then they've got this launch off first phase, which I've been really, really impressed with. And this is where you can see Larkham's knowledge of the game coming into play. They've been really accurate at those strike plays off first phase, and they've got a lot of reward from it. And there's one thing for a coach to analyze opposition and to give a playbook to teams, but to be able to execute under pressure is something else. And I think we've seen that from this Munster side, that whatever picture Leinster show them at the weekend, they have to be accurate. It's going to come down to those clinical moments
are Munster going to be able to execute those plays? Yes, you expect them to bring that ferocity at the breakdown, that relentless aggression, physicality, all of those things are a given in a game like this. But can Munster take those opportunities when they're in front of them? Can they get the tries when they need to? Because we know Leinster have that ability to score tries. They've scored a bonus point in every game they've played so far this season. So Munster will have to be brave. They'll have to go after Leinster and be clinical.
And Jamie, we're going to see it because Ulster are pushing on in that conference and Leinster are chasing. So like, we really are going to see a kind of hungry Leinster side. That will be brought by the back row. And I'd be interested in on your take on that, because for me, that's the most competitive place I see for green shirts. I think this weekend certainly is a trial when it comes to the back row.
Yeah, I mean, look, you see Jack O'Donoghue coming back. You've got Coombs, who's going really well. You've got, you know, Pete and CJ there, you know, on the Leinster side. You know, Darris, Conan, Ruddock, Levy, Van der Fleer, Connors, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And the thing is that no one's really playing bad. They're all playing really well. And that becomes a massive headache for the coaching staff. But I think what they've got to look at is obviously players playing their best, but also how they put the best unit together that has the skills, abilities and balance to feed into the way Ireland wants to play. And you can, you know, a lot of narrative coming out of Ireland has been around, you know, evolution of play, you know, not being as structured, particularly in multi-phase rugby as they might have been beforehand. And I think you've seen in both Leinster and Munster that trickle down and them playing this, yes, their launch is really good, their set place is really good, but the multi-phase rugby is getting better and better and better. And my feeling is it's going to be the players that do those basics really, really well, but then sprinkle a bit of magic on that multi-phase play, you know, being able to pass out of contact, pass before contact, good decision-making, know when to be able to try to pass out the back door behind a front door runner. These sort of things are definitely something the players are going to have to push on. Some will be more comfortable with that than others, but I think that's where the competition really, really comes up, because you know what you're going to get from certain players, and other players are kind of coming back. So there's a good mix of competition there. And like I said at the very, very start, from an Irish perspective, this is a pivotal moment. Like you're starting to close down on the 2-year mark going into the World Cup, and you really want to start bedding down your units together to get that experience and get those that game time together, so that when it comes around the World Cup, you're humming just nicely.
So, of those players you just mentioned, Jamie, who do you think is going to push on?
God, it's a great question, actually, because you know you could have turned around and said, you know, Reece Ruddock, you know, he's kind of hit his level, but this season kicks on another level. It'd be really interesting to see Coombs. He's been in form, really good form. I'd like to see him get more game time. I'm a big fan of Jack O'Donoghue coming back as well. But you know, I mean, really, you know, it's been amazing to see the evolution of CJ's game and Pete's game as well. You know, CJ's adding really subtle passes and footwork to his game, and then he does brilliant carries as well. Pete as well has become, he's get back to that way more of a ball playing player that we showed early on. I think it's amazing. Then on the flip side, I mean, I think everyone's excited to see Levy just kind of kick on every game, but you know, I'd be remiss of you not saying that the person that I see the most potential in on the field is potentially Caelan Doris.
Yeah, I think he's an incredible player. Strings, when we look at the back three though, because we know this game will end up in a bit of a kicking battle, there has been a void. No one has really jumped into that 15 spot for Ireland. Opportunity knocks this weekend, do you think?
Yeah, 100%. It's a position where guys have been playing out of position with the provinces. Guys are on the wing. You look at Stockdale, you look at Keane, and you look at Shane Taylor, Larmer. No one is playing regularly at 15. So again, you look at Keane, obviously he was so impressive against Ulster the last day at the RDS. I thought his backfield coverage was excellent. So again, Munster are going to have to be so, so accurate. If Leinster, you know, give them that 14 in that front line and there is space in behind, they've got to take it, they've got to be accurate, they've got to be brave to go after it. But you know, with Keenan, he's been so, so good, so impressive, whether he plays in the wing or 15. But I think, you know, he's a guy going forward, he's certainly put his hand up, I think, from an Irish perspective. But again, you know, you've got other guys who are chomping at the bit, and there is no position that is safe in this squad.
Okay, lads, thanks very much for your insight. Hope you enjoy the match. Well, Jamie, maybe not you, but thanks a million for joining us, lads.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Very good. That's about it from us, Marie.
Yeah, we'll be back and we have a bit of team news tomorrow, which should be exciting to see who does make those starting lineups. And I'd say we'll have a good chat about that, and we'll do a bit of Premier League and a bit of racing.
Absolutely. Thanks to Gerlet and Ronan. Our 2FM's favourite spacer, Carl Mullen, is chatting to an astronaut with LC21 after the news.
Live across the nation.